Hey, you guys. Merry Christmas Eve. Happy holidays. That's the day this is going up, unless you're a patron, and then you'll see it the day before. So I put a bunch of Christmas movies in the Patreon poll, and this is the one that won. And I was interested, the reason I put this in the Patreon poll, even though it's not a horror movie, obviously, but I think it's because I used to see it on cable a lot, like back in the late 80s and early 90s, and I hadn't seen it probably for at least 20 years, so I was really interested to kind of like see it in a modern context, because I know this Christmas movie, it turns up on a lot of people's kind of like favorite Christmas movies, but there's also kind of like people that really, really don't like it, and honestly, it has like a... It even had a real mixed reception when it first came out, and it had like a really troubled production as well, which I'll get into in a little bit. But this is the movie Scrooged from 1988. Now, you had never seen this before.
No.
This is a Richard Donner movie.
Yeah.
Which usually, yeah, it's well, I don't think he was the first choice.
Yeah.
I think actually Sidney Pollack was the first choice. But because when you think about it, Richard Donner, he doesn't really do a lot of straight-up comedies. He does action movies that have comedy to them.
I didn't know it was Donner. We're watching it, and I'm going, man, this thing shot really well.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the edit is real modern. I'll give it that. Other than that, I couldn't stand this movie.
You're not the only person. I'm kind of not really one way or the other about it. There's stuff about it that I like, and there's stuff about it that's funny. But some of the criticisms, even, you know, about the movie that came out at the time, I totally get that. And I think that time has kind of, like, shown that up. Because we talk about this a lot, about comedies and how it's really hard for a comedy to sort of stand the test of time.
Yeah, they humor ages very poorly.
Yeah, and I think this has aspects of that.
Yeah.
Because it does make, like, some cultural references and things like that, which maybe, like, wouldn't be funny nowadays because people don't really know. Like, all the stuff about, like, Mary Lou Retton, like, playing Tiny Tim and stuff like that, which I thought was funny, but if you don't know
who that is
or how famous she was, like, at the time, like, that probably wouldn't be funny. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
so
it's just the material, too.
It's
not funny.
Yeah. Well, So, obviously, this is a loose adaptation of A Christmas Carol, which obviously has been adapted 40 bajillion times, roughly. And so I like that they wanted to do, like, a more harder-edged, cynical version of it. Now, apparently, the two guys that wrote it, it was Mitch Glazer and Michael O'Donohue, who were Saturday Night Live writers, like, back in the heyday. And they actually wanted to make it a lot more edgy and a lot more mean-spirited. They actually wanted it to be R-rated. And I guess the studio, which was Paramount, they kind of wanted to tie it more into, like, a family-friendly Ghostbusters-y kind of vibe, because that was Bill Murray's, you know, last big hit. So a lot of stuff that was maybe, like, a lot more mean-spirited was cut out so that they could get a PG-13. So the screenwriters complained that they said probably only about 40% of their original script, like, made it into the thing. And actually, one of the screenwriters, I think it was O'Donohue, did not like the finished movie at all because he's like, most of our best shit was, like, not in there. Now, so the kind of context around this, so Bill Murray obviously had been in Ghostbusters in 1984, massive, massive hit, made him, I mean, he was a huge star before that because of Saturday Night Live, obviously, but he was a huge star, and the fame that that brought him kind of like freaked him out a little bit, I think, and he just couldn't really handle it. And
he
Bill, yeah, I mean,
I never really got the Bill Murray thing.
You know what? I love Bill Murray in the right role. I love Ghostbusters. It is still easily one of my top five favorite comedies of all time. He is hilarious in that.
That was the material, and the material kind of fit.
and I think
brand.
That and that was kind of like the interaction between him and Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis as well.
Yeah, there was
I think that's what
there.
Really kind of like made that, because that's like a little bit more of an ensemble, whereas this one he's more of a lead character.
Yeah,
which kind of like so he invented that the fame kind of like freaked him out, and then he, since he was famous, he wanted to do kind of a more serious role. So he very famously starred in Razor's Edge, which is like a adaptation of a Somerset Maugham novel. And it didn't do very well. And that kind of disillusioned him a little bit as well. So he actually took a break from acting for 3 or 4 years, because he just wanted to spend time with his family and get out of the limelight for a little while. Now, he was offered Scrooged, I think, in 86 at first, and he's like, no, I don't want to do it. But then later on, he was kind of like, you know, I kept getting all of these. I wanted to get back into acting. I kept getting sent all these scripts, and they were kind of shitty. But then he's like, oh, well, Scrooge, that was like a good script. And he knew the screenwriters because he'd worked with them on SNL. And so, so he wanted to do it. They gave him a lot of money for this. They gave him $6 million to kind of lure him back. And he was able to lure some kind of bigger actors as well, because there are like a ton of like celebrity cameos in this.
And the solid gold dancers.
Which, like I said, I'll get into that in a minute, but the whole thing with the solid gold dancers, which again is maybe another cultural reference that people wouldn't know what that was unless you grew up in the 80s.
Yeah.
But that kind of had like, that was one of the funniest scenes in the movie, like the one thing with them. But yeah, so they bring Bill Murray back. He hadn't been acting in a long time. He said, look, I'm really nervous about being a lead after I've been out of acting for so long. So he claimed he was like feeling a little rusty. And also, Bill Murray, being a comedian, being on SNL, he is more of an improv guy. Richard Donner was not really down with that. And a lot of the other actors weren't really down with that either. Not down with it, but it was just like hard for them to get around. I think I read this interview with Carol Kane and Karen Allen, who are also both in the movie, who kind of came from, well, at least Karen Allen came from a more theatrical background. She had been in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, obviously. She was also in Starman. And she's like, you know, well, I come from a theater background where you learn your lines and, you know, you can do some variation on it, but you're kind of supposed to do it consistent.
Yeah.
She's like, it was a little bit weird having to act with Bill Murray, who would do like just completely different shit and go like entirely off script like all the time, because that was just his thing. But because they had hired him for so much money, they just kind of let him get away with it. And honestly, they said so much of this movie ended up on the cutting room floor just because he would do like these crazy fucking takes, and he would do them like completely different.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Every time, I guess. Maybe it was kind of like, I don't really know if he was known for
all
being coked up or stuff, but I do kind of feel like
Live.
A lot of them did a lot of coke. Like,
all that old Saturday Night Live cast fucking from his generation, fucking cokeheads.
Yeah, I mean, and you can definitely see it. I mean, you can definitely see it if you go back and watch, like, some stuff from the 70s and 80s. SNL or any of those kind of, like, comedy things, always like Steve Martin Robin Williams
Robin
and stuff
Williams.
Like that. They're all just very, very manic.
They're very high. Yeah, lots and lots of cocaine. Jim Belushi.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of like one thing, and it's funny because nowadays Bill Murray, I feel like he's more, now that he's sort of like reinvented himself as this kind of like laid back hipster, kind of funny, which in a lot of ways comes across as funnier.
But see,
when he was in Ghostbusters, he had like a lot more deadpan shit going on, and that's like funnier to me. I have a problem with comedians in general, not just him, but comedians in general that do this kind of like over the top, like zany, because it just seems like so like desperate to me. Like it comes off across like it's funny, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's all out of style.
And this this has some moments of that.
Yeah.
To me, the funniest parts of Scrooged are in the beginning when he's being a total shitheel, like when he's in Scrooge mode.
I gotta say, though, that last Bill Murray movie that we did see, the one with the zombie movie, the one that had, what's his name, the driver?
Dead
Don't Die.
Jim
Jarmusch.
He was
great in that.
Yeah.
He was, Bill Murray is great in that. So, he's a lot better than he used to be, I think. But his style of humor was popular at that time. I didn't understand it at that time.
Well.
It made money, and that's...
Yeah.
It to me, it always came off as desperate, or a mixture of desperate and snarky, and not funny.
I mean, the snark and deadpan with Bill Murray is funnier to me. But see, Bill Murray, he said, like, in later interviews, him and Richard Donner did not really get along.
Yeah.
And he said famously, he's like, I don't think Richard Donner understands comedy. And interestingly, he said, I would keep doing these takes, and Richard Donner kept saying louder, louder, louder.
Yeah.
And he's like, I started to think he was deaf. Yeah. So it might have partially been Richard Donner.
Maybe. Not knowing.
Kind of like trying to hype him up and making him seem like manic and crazy. And maybe Bill Murray not wanting to do that.
Right.
So maybe some of that is on. And, I, you know, honestly, like I said, I love Bill Murray and I love Richard Donner, but I don't know if they were like really the right combo to work on this. This might have worked better with a different director that was more into comedy. I think it would have worked better if it wasn't so manic and so over the top in parts.
The movie's annoying. I just thought it was obnoxious. I could handle it for about 15 minutes, and then I started checking out. I was like, yeah, nah. It starts to become kind of laborious to watch it for me,
I definitely get that. To me it seems like, because as I said, I remember seeing this back in the day and like liking it but not loving it, not so much that, you know, it was something that I would watch every year like Muppet Christmas Carol, which is still delightful, but you know, but it was just like I remember there being funny parts in it, but it wasn't one that I would revisit a lot. So I was kind of curious to see it again. And I think that's why. There is like some really funny shit in this, particularly in the first half. And I really actually like some of the special effects, particularly the Ghost of Christmas Future, which I think looks really, really cool. You know, the special effects actually still look pretty good, like for 1988. This did cost $32 million to make. And it made money, but it didn't quite make its money back. So it was, it wasn't really considered a flop, but it wasn't as successful as Paramount was counting on.
Technically, it's great. Donner's doing his job.
It looks good.
It looks really good.
It really does look good.
And it's very good. It's just, it's the material. The material, the delivery, the cast, it's just, woo, no thanks.
I think some of it doesn't work because it's too broad.
Yeah.
Because I don't generally like broad humor. I like more deadpan humor or more subtle humor or more satirical humor, black comedy. I do like the idea of them updating the Scrooge story. And I do like them making it mean-spirited and darker, you know, harder-edged. I kind of wish they had gone farther in that direction. And made this even darker. Even though this does have some dark shit in it, and it does have some satirical stuff, particularly about, you know, TV and stuff. I mean, some of the funniest shit in this is the fake, like, TV, like, Christmas specials that they have, like, promos for at the very beginning. Like, the thing with Lee Majors.
Yeah.
With Santa Claus, the night the reindeer died.
Yeah, some of it was good.
I mean, that's like just, fucking, that's just hilarious. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that part.
And it's just like that whole part with like Lee Majors like talking to Santa, and Santa's being, you've been a very good boy this year. And this is one Santa that's going out the front door. It's like, you know what I mean? So like that kind of shit was funny. The promo that Bill Murray's character, Frank Cross, made for their Christmas Carol special, which had like, you know, like international terrorism, acid rain, all this other kind of, because he was trying to scare people into like watching the shit. See, that kind of, that shit was funny. The first part of it, where he's just a complete and utter asshole, is like way funnier than as it goes on. And honestly, one of my favorite things about it, so one of my favorite things, we were talking about the Solid Gold Dancers before, so they're having this fucking Christmas Carol adaptation, and it's $40 million and it's live, like in the universe of the movie. That's kind of meta. So they're doing that, and they have like all these stars, like Buddy Hackett is playing Ebenezer Scrooge, which again, funnier to people that grew up in the 70s and 80s. I don't know if people nowadays know who Buddy Hackett is, but you know, it was funny back then. So they have all that, and then they have Mary Lou Retton being Tiny Tim.
She's like a little ice skater.
No, she was a gymnast.
Gymnast, not an ice skater.
Yeah, she was.
She was little bitty thing. She looked like a child.
And yeah,
and she had short hair, so she did kind of look like a boy, is what they were saying. That, so it was funny.
Yeah, and like I said, to me, that's funnier to me because I grew up, you know, and that would have been funny if they'd have done, because it was kind of like a little bit, I don't know if I'd call it tasteless necessarily, like making her Tiny Tim, like she's cured and she's doing all these flips and shit. Like, that's pretty funny to me. But so they had the solid gold dancers in the middle of Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And the whole scene
of... In the stripper outfit.
Yeah, the whole scene of, like, the censor lady, like, coming over going, you can see her nipples, and he's right, like, I want to see her nipples. But this is a Christmas carol. And she's like, well, Charles Dickens would have wanted to see her nipples then.
Yeah. For all you childrens that wouldn't know who the Solid Gold Dancers are, on television, they had this fucking top 10 music hits fucking show. They just do like the top 10 of what was on the radio. I can't believe we used to... First of all, I can't believe that shit was on television looking back on it. I can't believe we watched it.
Well, we didn't know any better.
Didn't know any better. It was fucking terrible. It was just doing the top, and they would do 5 seconds of each song, and it wasn't Casey Kasem doing the fucking.
He had a different show. Solid Gold was a different thing.
And really, and while they would do that 10 seconds of the song, they'd have these dancers kind of like acting the fucking song. It was fucking ridiculous. But we watched it because the Solid Gold Dancers were, first of all, it was on television, and you had to watch some. But the Solid Gold Dancers were fucking hot. They were basically high-end strippers, I guess, you know, on Anavar, probably. Anavar and Prima Bowling, you know, we were coming out of a time where every so-called pretty girl was really a skinny little coke whore, you know, I mean, fucking slim as a board, to some women that had shape. And they were muscular and they could dance. So they were kind of the Solid Gold Dancers. They were legendary. Every teenage boy knew who they were. And but to have them in a Christmas movie was fucking ridiculous. That was funny.
Yeah, that whole scene about the nipples was funny.
Yeah, because we were always trying to catch nip slips and fucking what they were going to wear. It was very revealing. You could find the shit on YouTube, Solid Gold, the episode of Solid Gold. Fucking ridiculous. I can't believe that was on television, but it was.
But see, even back in the 80s, they knew it was ridiculous. So the fact of like putting it in a Christmas carol is still funny. Right.
And what was funny, not only was it on television, it got good ratings from what I remember. It was, you know. Yeah.
Well, we didn't have a lot to choose from.
Yeah,
to be fair.
And it was like the dancing version of fucking Jerry Springer. You know, it was like that. It was just lowbrow. Zero content fucking television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, but yeah, that whole scene in this movie is like, was very funny to me because I really liked his delivery on it. And like the two crew guys going, you can hardly see her nipples, and him going, and those guys are really looking like that shit is funny.
It was also deadpan that they were in this shit.
Yeah.
In the background fucking dancing and shit.
Right.
And you're going, wait, but that's the Solid Gold Dancer.
Right. See, and that's what's funnier to me. Just like
just the deadpan
little little touches like stuff that's not even referred to. Like, for example, in Frank Cross's office, you know, Bill Murray's character, his last name is Cross, right? Up on the wall, like over where his exercise bike is, it has like a dictionary definition of cross, and it says a thing you nail people to.
Yeah.
And no one mentions it. No. And I'm like, oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not brought up. So I kind of like I said, I kind of like subtler humor in a lot of ways.
Right.
Although some of the violence in this, like the censor lady getting the shit kicked out of her, like everything falling on her and stuff, I'll admit that was funny. Mm. But I'm not usually into like Three Stooges type of, you know, yuck, you know, that kind of stuff. Although, I mean, getting kicked in the balls is usually funny, like that kind of stuff. But I don't know, it's in small doses.
It just depends on who's telling this story, what the tone of this fucking thing. Humor's hard to do, you know. And this one, if you ask me, is a spectacular failure. It's just bad. Bad all around.
The tone of it is very strange, and I think I remembered that even seeing it back in... I don't think I saw this in the theater. I think I saw it on cable, whenever it came out on cable, 89, 90, whenever. And I think I saw it then, and I remember, like, liking it, like, thinking some of it was funny, or, you know, kind of sweet or whatever, but then, like, thinking some of it was cool, but thinking the tone of it was really weird. But like I said, it did have good moments. Like, I really liked the solid gold thing. I really liked all the fake TV promos.
Yeah.
I really liked, actually, I really liked the relationship between Bill Murray's character and Karen Allen's character. Her name's Claire. And she's, like, the girl that he left behind, like, on his way to success. That actually did seem really kind of sweet and genuine, like, especially when he's with the Ghost of Christmas Past and goes back and sees, like, how he fucked up and everything. Because she's great in it. I mean, I love Karen Allen anyway. She's great in it. I also have to give a shout-out. I loved David Johansen, a.k.a. Buster Poindexter, as the Ghost of Christmas Past. As that, like, foul-mouthed, like, cab driver type thing. I really, really liked him in that. Now, he was not the first choice. The first choice for that role was Sam Kinison, which would have been really irritating.
Yeah.
If you guys don't remember, he's dead now.
Yeah, another but, one of us.
But he just, like, screamed all the time. But that was kind of his whole act, at least as far as I can remember.
Yeah.
But he was supposed to be in that, and he was really mad when David Johansen got it, because David Johansen was friends with Bill Murray. But honestly, I think David Johansen was way better in it. He's like, because I always liked him, actually. He seems like a really charismatic. He used to be in the New York Dolls as well, in case you guys didn't know. Another interesting fact about David Johansen being in this is that Arthur Kane, who was also in the New York Dolls and had a really sad life, look up his Wikipedia page if you don't know about that. He was so angry that David Johansen did the Buster Poindexter thing and was in this big movie and was famous, and Arthur Kane wasn't, even though there were all these other bands that were ripping off the New York Dolls, that Arthur Kane actually jumped out of a second floor window attempting suicide. Mm. It didn't kill him. He died later. But he was just so mad that he was just, like, toiling away in broke-ass obscurity while David Johansen was still famous. And so I thought that was kind of, like, fucked up. But yeah, I really do like David Johansen in this as the Ghost of Christmas Past. He's great. I actually like all the Christmas Past stuff, like where he's going back to, you know, his parents' house, and one of his older brothers plays his dad and, like, comes home drunk and, like, gives him 5 pounds of veal for Christmas and shit. Like that shit's funny. And then, like, him being at the Christmas party and that girl, like, photocopying her butt and, like, giving everybody pictures of her butt for Christmas and shit like that. Like, that's funny. I don't really like, and I normally love Carol Kane. I don't really like her as the Ghost of Christmas Present in this one. I didn't really like all the kind of over-the-top, because basically she just shows up and just, like, beats the shit out of Bill Murray. You know, she kicks him in the balls and, like, pulls on his lip and hits him with the toaster and stuff. And parts of that are funny, but I think it just, like, goes too far. You know, so that part didn't really, like, work for me too much. I do like the Christmas future thing, though. The Christmas future ghost in this one looks really cool. He's, like, this really tall, like, kind of apparition with the hood, but then his face is like a TV, and so, like, the TV screen, like, kind of goes all fucked up and then, like, shows stuff that's gonna happen in his future. So that sequence I really like, because it's kind of creepy. Like, I like how the Christmas future guy, like, comes through all the TVs, and then this big skeleton hand comes out, and, like, they show Bill Murray, like, at his cremation, and, like, only his brother and stuff are there. Like, I think Bill Murray's, like, three of his actual brothers are in this. One of them plays his actual brother, one plays his dad, and one plays, like, a friend of his. But yeah, so, like I said, there's a lot of cameos. I think John Forsythe was in this as the Jacob Marley type character, who's like a golfer and shows up with the thing, golf ball falling out of the back of his head and, like, rats coming out of and stuff. So that's kind of cool. So this actually does have cool shit in it. And I actually, even though normally Bobcat Goldthwait is annoying, like, his 80s persona was annoying, but I kind of liked him in this one. He kind of played an executive that got fired on Christmas Eve, and then he comes back later, like, at the end, and with a shotgun, and he's, like, shooting at Bill Murray, which, you know, doesn't really play the same nowadays as it did back in the 80s, but that part was actually pretty funny. Like, I still find Bob Goldthwait's voice, the persona that he put on back then, kind of annoying, but I liked his character in this one, though. And I actually kind of liked Alfred Woodard as well, like, as Bill Murray's, like, assistant. And her kid is, like, the Tiny Tim equivalent. But he's not, like, he's mute because, like, his dad got murdered, which, again, is kind of dark. So I liked, like, a lot of the darker aspects. I think it would have been better, one, if they'd have gone darker and gone R-rated. You know, which they've done in subsequent years. Like, this isn't really very edgy at all compared to something like Bad Santa or, you know, the dark Christmas movies they've made in the years since then. I kind of feel like they should have gone darker and they should have reined in maybe not so much Bill Murray's improvisation. I don't think that was the problem, but I think maybe Richard Donner was kind of pushing him into this sort of like manic, you know, over the top kind of thing. And I think maybe it goes over the line to becoming like shrill.
Yeah, it's annoying.
You know, and so tonally it's very, very weird. Yeah. Because some of it works and some of it doesn't because it's just too much. I'm not sure how I feel about like the very famous last scene where Bill Murray like takes over the whole thing and like improvises this big long thing about finding the true meaning of Christmas and everything like that. And it almost seems like he's having a nervous breakdown like on set. Like he's just kind of going this crazy thing. And I was like, I kind of like it, but then it's kind of like, I'm not sure if I buy it because he's so good at being a dickhead at the beginning that it's hard for me to buy this complete 180 in his, you know, in his worldview, I guess. So it still kind of comes off as him being sort of, like, crazy and cynical and mean and stuff like that at the end. I don't know. It just seems to me that you can see a little bit that Bill Murray was not having a good time making this movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, some of that really seems to come through in particular scenes. And I don't know. And it's weird because I was watching... I think, like, Oliver Harper did a breakdown of this as well. And he showed kind of a thing with the Siskel and Ebert review from the time that this came out. Siskel liked it. Ebert hated this movie.
Yeah.
And he said pretty much that he's like, this movie just seems so... He's like, it seems so angry. Like, and not in a way... He's like, I just felt like nobody was having a good time, like, making this movie. And Bill Murray indeed did say later on that making this movie was miserable. Because, like I said, he didn't... You know, he wasn't comfortable being in the lead role. Because he hadn't been acting for such a long time. He didn't get along with Richard Donner. You know, his acting style didn't really gel with the other ones. So, you know, they were kind of having a rough time. And honestly, I kind of feel like this was a movie that did okay at the time that it came out. But I feel like when it was on cable, it kind of got like a more like appreciative audience. But again, it seems like one that... Yes, I've seen it turn up on a lot of people's favorite Christmas movie lists, like especially like dark Christmas movies or anti-Christmas movies, if you want to call them that. But I've seen just as many people that really don't like it. And a lot of people don't like it for the same reasons that you didn't like it. And the reasons I don't dislike it, but I wish that certain things have been changed about it. It's very uneven. Movie for me. Parts of it are very, very funny and still make me laugh. But parts of it, I'm just like, man, that's, like you said, it gets to a point where it's just too much. It's like obnoxious.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'd be kind of interested to see what the fan consensus is on this.
My advice is absolutely not. Don't even bother with it. It's just not artistically viable, and it's not a pleasant experience. It's just bullshit, you know. and it's just bullshit, and it's not funny humor. And
Yeah, like I said, it had moments. There was some stuff in it that's funny.
It could have been good
to me.
It's like, and this could have been, you know, a great action movie, but it wasn't. Yeah, this could have been a great comedy, but it wasn't. You know, yeah, there was potential there, but they missed it. So, no. Two thumbs down from me.
I can see what you're saying.
No, it's just not
like good. I said, there's still stuff in there that I like, but overall, I don't think that I would, like, watch it again, necessarily.
No, and you know, I don't want to harp so much on fucking Bill Murray, you know. He came from a generation of comics that I didn't really think was that funny to begin with. Boomers thought they were funny. I didn't think they were funny. Even as a kid, I was like, yeah. The only guy kind of from that generation that I thought was funny came out after these guys, because these dudes all kind of faded up when did other things, and that was Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy took over SNL once these guys all left. And kind of single-handedly revived Saturday Night Live for a while. And then he went off to go make movies, too. But Eddie Murphy was very naturalistic compared to the older generation of comics. They were just cocaine-inspired maniacs. Party maniacs.
And the thing about it, though, is that sometimes that could work. Like, for example, Steve Martin, although some of his stand-up was funny and some of it not so much, if he was given, like, a good script, like a good movie like The Jerk or The Man with Two Brains...
Then he was better.
Then it was funny.
He was a lot better, yeah.
Then he was funny.
Yeah.
But I've also seen him in movies where he was horribly unfunny.
Yeah, terrible.
So I think it, like, depended on the movie. And I think Bill Murray, even though I love him, I mean, he's a national treasure. Like I said, Ghostbusters, easily one of my favorite comedies of all time. Like, no contest. And he was great in that. And he's great in stuff, like, nowadays... But if you give him, like, the wrong material, it's not... I think, like you said, it's a little coked up. It comes across as a little try-hard. I think Robin Williams had that sometimes, too.
Big time.
Even though Robin Williams could also be super, super funny, and he was also a good dramatic actor.
But you're talking about their movies. I really wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the way they were on SNL. And that's really where their comedy styles came from. That's what made them big. And they were fucking annoying. They were just real obnoxious. But, you know, a lot of the United States was on cocaine at that time. So it was funny. It was. They were. So they understood it.
That's why I laughed.
Yeah, it was drug humor.
Yeah.
And it doesn't translate very well because half the people are not coked up. Like
well, it's just kind of like you kind of have to be on marijuana for Cheech and Chong to be funny. You knew what I was going to say.
Now, the ultimate incarnation of these assholes came about later on with this dude named Chris Farley, who was a fucking annoying asshole. I mean...
Yeah, see, I never thought just, Chris Farley was...
No, there was nothing funny about the dude. You can tell that he was really trying to overcompensate for insecurities about being fat. He spent most of his money on fucking hookers and blow, and he died. He wasn't funny, and every fucking white-hatted jock boy in the world wanted to be fucking Chris Farley and thought they were Chris Farley.
I remember those dark times.
All right. They had dudes that would talk like that.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
And remember those assholes?
Yeah. Yep.
And so they're Murray and fucking Martin and all those guys, kind of to me, they're just other versions of Chris Farley.
Well, I think Chris Farley is kind of like the extreme version.
He was building upon his predecessors, really.
Because, like I said, to me, Steve Martin and Bill Murray and stuff like that can be fucking hilarious. Again, Man with Two Brains with Steve Martin, one of my favorite comedies of all time. They're funnier when they're restrained.
Yeah, it's because they're in movies. Movies, I thought they were funnier than they were on Saturday Night Live when they were doing their stand-up. Although their stand-up was fucking annoying.
I mean, in general, I like more subdued...
Right.
Subdued comedy, like where you're not, because to me, if you're trying really hard, like it just comes across as try hard, hard is not funny.
Martin is fucking brilliant when he's got the right material, like you see him when he could do a Little Shop of Horrors, he was doing a musical, he was fucking great in it.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
If you give him the right shit, and he can act and he can sing, and he could sing even on Saturday Night Live, but he was just fucking so coked up. Same thing with Robin Williams. Robin Williams was just, you just couldn't take him on fucking SNL. More from Work was even kind of worse. His mother, you could tell he was just snorting so many lines. He was just real annoying to me. But he mellowed out. He came up with some of the best fucking like horror type thrillers, like 1 Hour Photo. Fucking, it was great.
Yeah, in serious roles, he was fantastic.
Yeah, Bicentennial Man.
Dead Poets Society.
Fucking, yeah. You know, he was very talented. Unfortunately, took his own life. But Williams got good when he stopped coking it up. You know?
Yeah, well...
Coke didn't make you funny. It made you annoying. It made you an asshole.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the comedy to me, I like comedy that comes across as not trying to be comedy. I don't like try hard. I don't like... like you said, that's why I never really liked like Jim Carrey or anybody like that. And I like Jim Carrey in dramatic roles. He's actually good when he's just acting like a normal person. Same with Will Ferrell.
He's just acting like a normal person, though. That dude is not a normal
person. No, I know. But I'm just saying that he can do that, so he can act. Ferrell, like, when he's acting like a normal person, I don't mind him. But when he's trying to be funny, not so much. And because to me, like you said, it comes across as very try-hard.
Yeah.
And that is not funny to me. I tend to like stand-up comedians. I tend to like stand-up comedians that just tell funny stories rather than telling jokes.
That's why in the 80s, in the early 80s, me and all my friends, fucking the advent of fucking Eddie Murphy. You know, some of the shit that he was doing on SNL and the Raw series, the Raw video that came out where he was doing the stand-up, we loved it. Because compared to everybody else, he was real natural and he was real cool. He wasn't... And he would tell funny stories.
Yeah.
He just wasn't fucking coked to the gills being annoying.
Yeah, he didn't seem like he was just like constantly screaming like, or wild-eyed or anything.
He was just a regular guy and he was funny.
Yeah.
And he was being honest. You could tell that those stories that he was telling were based on something that either he saw or something that really happened to him or something he thought of. Like, he goes into whiteface and becomes this white dude. This is on SNL. And tries to live as a white dude. And he's noticing on the bus that when the black people leave, all of a sudden they bust out champagne and all the white people are partying. And they're not charging people for, nah, don't worry. They're just giving each other jewelry and shit. You know what I mean? It was fucking hilarious, man. Because he... just always wanted to know what happened when black people are not around, you know, and it's just...
It's true.
You can see it on... Yeah, you guys didn't know that? When y'all aren't around, man, we just get free shit. We get on a fucking subway for free, get on the buses for free. Don't even have to pay the tabs at the restaurants.
We get everything for free.
Just, yeah, if I can go into a jewelry store, they just give us a Rolex. Because I don't worry about it.
Here, have a car.
Take it.
Take
it. We pay for shit only when y'all are around. But no, that was Eddie Murphy idea. I feel that, like, shit was fucking hilarious.
I feel like that's an extension of the joke about dudes being mystified about women always going to the bathroom in groups. Is there like some kind of big party and there's like male strippers and
yeah, what's happening in that bathroom, right?
And like, right.
Yeah, so he called it, man. That was great, man. And the other comics weren't doing that. They weren't that insightful or that curious about life. It was just Coke-inspired zaniness.
And
I never liked fucking Bill Murray when he was in that mode, because he just came off as a snarky motherfucker that needed his ass beat. And really, that's what he comes with. He says, I'd fucking punch that dude. And it's just, he wasn't a pleasant experience. Now, later on, when he had good material and he chilled out, you know what I mean? He is a good dude. You know, he's a good dude. I've seen interviews with him. He seems like a good guy. It's just that back in those days, he was an asshole.
Although I will, I mean, like I said, I'm going to go to bat for Ghostbusters because he was fucking hilarious.
Yeah. He was fucking hilarious. He was very restrained in that compared to what.
He's way funnier
Funner when he's fucking allowed to do it mellow and fucking, you know, he's a lot funnier then. That's a masterpiece of his. I'm not saying he's not talented. He's talented. He just has the right material, right direction.
Yeah.
And
in this, when they kind of.
And he has to be kind of sober, you know, fucking keep your nose out of the fucking.
And cup. In this, and it might have been, like I said, it might have been a Richard Donner, like, kind of making him go louder and broader than he normally would have.
Yeah.
I don't think that works to his advantage.
No.
Although I don't think it's just him. I think that
some
of the other stuff, like I said, I normally love Carol Kane, but I didn't really like that whole like thing with the Ghost of Christmas Present. I think that was too over the top.
Yeah.
You know, it was a good idea. It was just like too much.
And that new Murray movie where he was, you know, playing in that damn zombie movie, and he was brilliant in it. He was great. I was happy to see him.
He did a cameo in Zombieland too, which was fucking hysterical.
Yeah. So, you know, he's good. But he's at his best now, if you ask me. I'd like to see a whole movie with him in it.
Yeah.
Did you ever see...
Well, you probably didn't see Lost in Translation, although that's not really a comedy, really. But he was actually really, really good in that. That came out a while back, though. Back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s? I can't remember when that came out. But yeah, he was great in that. But it wasn't... Like I said, he's a lot better when he's not... Well, just the same, like I said, like Robin Williams.
Right.
Much better when they're restrained. Yeah. I like more restrained comedy because it doesn't come across as...
It's a lot funnier.
Because otherwise it feels like some obnoxious jackhole is just like grabbing you by the lapels and being like, laugh, it's funny! You know what I mean? And it's like, I can't really handle that because I'm like, no, not really.
Well,
if
like
you have to try that hard, it's not funny.
Like I said many times before, comedy goes in and out of style. Certain types of comedy goes in and out. And in general, comedy ages very poorly. You can go back and see some of the old comedy classics in the past. They're not funny. Not anymore. They were funny in the day, but
some still are, but it's
Airplane
rare.
One is still funny.
Yeah, that's still pretty funny, guys.
Like,
Young Frankenstein is still funny.
Young Frankenstein is funny. Yeah, a lot of the I want to go back and see Stir Crazy. I haven't seen it forever, but it's probably still funny.
I think Blazing Saddles is still funny.
Yeah, probably still funny. But shit that is not funny. Mel Brooks' History of the World is not funny anymore. Eddie Murphy Raw is not that. It's not funny anymore. It's not as funny as it was.
But yeah,
it was new.
It was a lot edgier.
It was
back
a lot
then.
Edgier back then. It's just some things don't age.
I will say, since we're talking about stuff that ages and stuff, something that was mentioned in this movie, just kind of like as a throwaway gag, where the president of the network that Bill Murray works for, which is called IBC, who's played by Robert Mitchum, by the way, another cameo, and he comes in and says, we need to start making programming for cats and dogs because all of these scientists have proven that they're starting to watch TV now.
Yeah, that was funny, actually.
I was like, also kind of weirdly pressing it because they have that now.
Yeah.
They have YouTube channels that your dogs and cats can watch. I think Roku has a couple of actual TV channels that have, you know, like birds and shit on there that like the cats can watch.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So it's like...
That scene happened during the beginning part of the movie when the movie was still tolerable for me to watch.
Yeah.
Another 10, 15 minutes later, I was just totally emotionally and mentally checked out of this.
I liked almost everything up until, like, the Ghost of Christmas Present part. Like, I liked the Ghost of Christmas Past. Like I said, David Johansen's really good in it. And I liked all the TV promo jokes. I liked all that. I didn't really like the middle part of the movie. And then I liked kind of a little bit of the end part when the Ghost of Christmas Future comes. Because I liked the imagery like around that. I really liked the shots of him going into the crematorium and the creepiness of the, you know, Ghost of Christmas Future. And the funny shit with Bobcat Goldthwait trying to blow his head off. That was in the office and stuff. That part was funny. So this has moments. It has parts in it that I like. But... overall, yeah, it's kind of like it would be one that you'd watch like the funny parts and then skip through a bunch of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it'd be that kind of thing. But like I said, I'm kind of interested to see like how our 13 o'clock audience feels about it, because like I said, I feel like this is a very divisive Christmas movie.
I tell you what, I enjoyed Superman 4 far more than I enjoyed this one. But I like Superman 4.
That's a pretty bold statement, okay. Tom.
So, if that puts it into perspective, I'd watch fucking Superman 4 three or four times. I would never... No, not this one.
Yeah, I don't know if I would watch this again.
Nah.
I don't know if I'd watch this again. I've seen it a few times, like I said, but I hadn't seen it for a really long time.
This one's best forgotten.
You think? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's got good bits, but I'm not a huge fan of it, so I'm going to say it. But I'm interested to see what everyone else thinks about it. So tell us what you think about it in the comments, and have a Merry Christmas. We will talk to you guys again later. Bye.